Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, it is a Wednesday. Oh, it just feels nicer in Los Angeles over the last couple of days. I'm not sure what it is. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. Oh, got so many things to talk about today. Joy Taylor is joining me. I love a little chaos. Mm-hmm. And whenever a relationship ends, there's always chaos, right? There's anger. I mean, you never have a breakup and you both wanted to break up. That's what they always do in Hollywood. Hollywood people break up and they're always like, you know what? I respect her so much. He's the greatest guy ever.
Their publicists have these prepared statements.
Yeah, the publicists. And by the way, he's bad-mouthing her to all his friends. She's telling everybody, including her agent, he's a jerk. But
Well, there's fallout.
It's fallout. So let's start with fallout. Whenever you are dumped, she's left at the altar. He's like, this isn't going to work. Or she dumps you, or your favorite NBA superstar leaves for a team, or your college football or basketball coach leaves. Here's what you always hear. It's not that they left. It's how they left. It's when they left. I mean, it was okay, but could he not given me a couple of extra months? I'd bought the flowers for the wedding. I'd paid for the pictures. It's not that LeBron left Cleveland. It's how he left the press conference. Oh, really? Had LeBron left Cleveland for Miami and had no press conference, you wouldn't have burned the jersey, you doofus? It's that they left. And you're hurt. And it's okay to be hurt. Notre Dame football is going to be fine. They're going to hire Luke Fickell, probably. He's great. Marcus Freeman, be great. Oklahoma football is going to be fine. It's not. Look yourself in the mirror if you're a 35, 40-year-old man ripping young kids on the internet. Look yourself in the mirror. Stop projecting. It's that they left. But why don't I, as a psychologist for America, tell you about the how they left and when they left? You don't like that. How Brian Kelly left. Well, actually, he and Lincoln Riley left the same way, immediately. Came back, said hi to the players. I love all of you. I've got to get in a private jet and go to the next job. Don't blame the coaches. Blame the NCAA. When they introduced this ludicrous early signing period, which I despise and so do coaches, it gives coaches no life. And they have to leave immediately because they got 10 to 14 days for the early signing period, and now 75 to 80% of the good players all sign then. You can't just give up 7 to 8 players if you're LSU, give them to Bama, give them to Georgia. You got to immediately build a staff. The second you hang up with LSU, you have to call your top 5 assistants. You fly back to Notre Dame. You're on the phone the entire time talking. You say bye to your players. The same day you're out, you land and you go to kids' houses. It's what Lincoln Riley's doing. It's what Brian Kelly did. Blame the NCAA. Okay? How they left. The NCAA gives choice, no wiggle room. The early signing period is now the signing period. You can't just say, well, we'll give up this class. You kidding me? Those are 5-star LSU kids, 5-star USC kids. You give them up, they come back and beat you in 3 years. They come back and beat you in 2 years. Okay, that's number one. And the other thing is, when he left, he dumped me. I didn't like when he left. You got dumped, it's okay. When he left. Notre Dame, Brian Kelly knows this. He's not leaving a national championship team at Notre Dame. He knows this. They got pounded at home by Cincinnati. Cincinnati's going to get pounded by Georgia. In fact, last night, the college football playoff rankings came out. I agreed 1 through 6. And I will say again, as I said weeks ago, Oklahoma State is the most underrated team in the country. And if they have to play Georgia, it will be interesting. They may not beat them, but it'll be interesting. This is not a national championship team. Okay, if it was, but it can't be at Notre Dame. Because LSU gets 2 to 3 5-star players a class. Notre Dame has landed 1 in 5 years. That means at any given time, LSU's got 12 or 13 5-star kids, and Notre Dame's got one. That's why every time Brian plays a Bama or a Georgia or a Clemson, they get whacked in these big playoff games. He's telling you two things. Brian Kelly's telling you two things the way he left. One, the NCAA has trapped all of us coaches. Unless you're playing for a national championship, go. You got to build the next place fast. You can't in the SEC give up 7, 8 recruits. You got to be on the phone with them immediately and build a staff immediately. Blame the NCAA. Don't blame the coaches. Talented people get jobs. They leave less talented places or less talented people. And the second thing he's telling you is, listen, this was a rebuilding season. I mean, Notre Dame does not have a big win this year. Wisconsin's average. Purdue, really? You chalking that one up? They played Cincinnati. They got pounded at home soundly. Wasn't even competitive early. So, come on. It's that LeBron left. Stop trying to fool us that it's how he left and when he left. Like he doesn't with Jim Gray hold that press conference. You're not ticked off. She dumped you. It hurts. It's okay to be hurt. But look yourself in the mirror if you're blaming coaches and ripping people and ripping kids for decommitting. Players have never had more power. Coaches have never had more power. And people with power and leverage are going to occasionally use it. Doesn't make them bad people. Okay. So I watched a little Brooklyn Nets and Knicks last night. I watched the second half of that. And then I watched a lot of the Suns Warriors. You know, Suns Warriors played last night. You know I like big brands. I've always been upfront about this. I've never denied it. I've always been totally honest with you, the viewer, the consumer, the listener. The Cowboys win, it's good for my business. The Lakers win, it's good for my business. The Yankees win, it's good for Fox and our playoff baseball coverage business. Notre Dame football, Duke basketball. Like the big brands are good. But there's also a responsibility, I believe, and I think Joy believes this too, there is a responsibility we have to not try to sell you nonsense. That when the big brands are great, it's good and we like it. But when they're not great, I'm not going to try to pretend they're great. And I'm watching the Phoenix Suns last night. They would sweep the Lakers in 4 games if all 4 games were played in Los Angeles. The Lakers will not catch the Phoenix Suns for the next half decade. It's over. Forget the Warriors, and the Warriors are better than the Lakers too. The Phoenix Suns are better everywhere. First of all, defensively, they're long, they're versatile, they're athletic, they have a rim defender, they play 10 guys deep. They've got some veterans, but mostly 7 of their 10 players are in their prime. None of the Lakers' top 10 guys are in their prime. 7 of 10 for Phoenix are. They're a great defensive team, incredibly deep and versatile. Offensively, they have a Hall of Fame smart point guard. They have a lethal number 2 shooting scoring guard. They have a rim protector. I swear he can guard anybody on the floor, maybe a point guard. They get easy points down low. They're the best clutch team in the league. They're 9-1 in clutch situations, number 1 in the NBA. They have the highest field goal percentage in the league in clutch situations. So they're smart guys who get the ball to the right team. And unlike the Lakers, the Suns love their coach. The Lakers are Jurassic and old and outdated and tired. The bench is old. The starters are old. AD's brittle. Westbrook in crisis is a disaster. We have to be honest about this. The Phoenix Suns are the new power in the West. And if you look at the construct of their roster, they're not going away. They're going to get a new owner, hopefully. They've got a great coach. They've got length and athleticism. You, in any sport, ask yourself, is the core in their prime? The Phoenix Suns, outside of Chris Paul and Jay Crowder, everybody else playing is entering their prime. They're only getting better. What have they won? 17 straight now? I mean, they took the Warriors and Steph Curry apart last night. Now, these two teams will meet multiple times. In fact, I think they meet in the Bay Area here in a few days. Golden State has a chance to win. But LeBron now doesn't have the power to attract younger players to want to play with him. That's why he has to call Westbrook and Melo. Generationally, those guys still hold him in high esteem. The Devin Bookers, I'm not giving my brand to LeBron. Ayton, I'm not. Mikhail Bridges, what are we doing here? Now, we got Chris Paul. He's our Robin Hood. He's leading us to the promised land. But you look at Phoenix right now. We have to be honest in our business. Lakers aren't that interesting. They're not as deep. They're not as athletic. They're not as long. They don't love their coach. You just got to come to terms. If you're a Laker fan, you got to come to terms with this. You don't have a single player on that roster, elite player in their prime. And you're not going to change that as a trading deadline. We have to be honest in our business. There is a new sheriff in town. Okay, it's Phoenix. Like Milwaukee and Brooklyn, they're going to battle in the East. Maybe Philadelphia, they're going to battle in the East. Boston, get out of here. You're going to battle in the East. Washington, it's cute, but it's regular season. And in the West, the power is the Warriors and the Phoenix Suns. It's going to be like that for half a decade. I'm not saying I won't talk about the Lakers when they get swept by Phoenix. I'll mention it on the show. But we got to be honest here. That team is incredible. Phoenix is good enough to lose multiple starters for stretches and just win games. Like, that's how good. You know a team is good. Lakers now have LeBron back, mostly, and they can't beat bad teams. So, I'm all in on Phoenix. I found the Phoenix Warriors first quarter last night. It was like 35-31. If you watch that basketball and you think the Lakers can compete with that, you're lying to yourself. They aren't even close. They're 1,000 miles down the road from that. They got everything. The smart point guard, the devastating score, the athletic rim protector, multiple wing defenders, multiple three shooters, incredible chemistry, athletic and long and feisty and in passing lanes. And then offensively, they get cheap, easy points with Ayton. They have a pretty good bench, not great, but a solid bench. They got everything. They have got everything.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Brett Favre said something. Everybody is Mac Jones is Brady. Oh, don't say that. That'll be ridiculous. And the media sometimes is terrified to say anything, because it could come back to haunt them if Mac Jones wasn't very good. But the comps for Mac Jones and Brady, you can see them. And I'm not talking Brady now. I'm talking Brady when he was 23 years old. So Brett Favre talked about it on Sirius XM.
Obviously, Coach Belichick and Josh McDaniels and the organization chose Mac Jones for a reason. The way he plays, being ready to play instantly and not making mistakes. Really sort of a young carbon copy of Tom Brady. Obviously way premature to say he is the next Tom Brady, but he plays a lot like him. You know, he's an intellectual player. He's not going to beat you with his feet, but his mind and his arm is what's in his pocket presence. He has all those tools.
Nobody is comparing Mac Jones to Tom now, but let's go to when Tom was that age. So in high school, they were both good recruits. Neither was a five-star recruit. But Brady was drafted by a Major League Baseball team. USC's offensive coordinator wanted him. The coach didn't. He went to Michigan. And back when Brady came out of college, Michigan was a top five program. And then in college, neither had a ton of starts. Both kind of had to sit and wait and battle somebody else. And when they did start, they won. They were very good. But neither was given a ton of credit in college, right? Like it was the program. It was Alabama, not Mac Jones. It was Michigan, power football. It wasn't Brady. And then pre-draft, both have body issues. Mac Jones's nickname is Mac and Cheese. And Brady legendarily shirt off at the combine. And then their early NFL starts. The defense clearly led the way for both. And not a lot of heavy lifting. If you look at their first 12 starts, they're virtually identical numbers. both have an excellent offensive coordinator. Tom had Charlie Weiss. Mac Jones has Josh McDaniel. Both have Belichick. Both have great defenses. Their paths, their resumes early are virtually identical. Even their bodies. Mac is 6'3", 216. Tom was 6'4", 210. Neither hyper-athletic, neither with a cannon, but a good arm sufficient, and both lauded for their leadership and pre-snap abilities. Blockbuster and Netflix, it's not a bad comp. They did look a lot like each other years ago. They don't today. Andrew Luck and John Elway out of Stanford. The comp was absolutely true. One's a Hall of Famer and a legend. One left early. Earlier than we wanted. But the comps were okay. If you go to Bill Belichick, 1991, it's out in the internet now. His Bible on what he looks for from a quarterback. This is Belichick's what I look for in a quarterback in 1991. I'm looking at it now. It's on the internet. It reads Brady and Mac Jones. Leadership, accuracy, don't need you to be hyper-athletic. All the things Belichick in 91 wrote down that he wanted in a quarterback today in 2021 sound exactly like Mac Jones and sounded exactly like Tom Brady. The comp's accurate. Young Tom and Mac today, I mean, the box is just check. Old Tom, Joe Montana doesn't even compare to him anymore.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Byer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Mel Tucker got $95 million. Mel Tucker, who I love. Brian Kelly has 19 times more wins. Is he worth $250 million? Player, it's easy to go on the air or to go to Twitter and say, I'm for the players, they should all be paid. Very few have any leverage. Go to Kansas basketball, been good for a zillion years. Name their five best players. Wilt, I mean, they literally change the program because they get five-star guys every year. So the players are valuable. But when you're... I hear a lot of media buzzkills lament what coaches make. It's called leverage. Leverage is money, leverage is power, and timing is both. And so when you are getting up against the early signing period and you have Brian Kelly's record and Lincoln Riley's record and the market, LSU's a big brand and USC's a big brand, they're bringing the bag. And by the way, these great players in the pros – many of them will have the exact same leverage. It's called free agency. And so, remember, just because as a broadcaster, I had no leverage at 27. Even my bosses would acknowledge today, I got leverage. I'm good. I got a lot of people like me. I had none at 27, nor should I have. Brian Kelly's got leverage because he's been great for 20 years. He rebuilt a staggeringly important brand. Doesn't mean Kyle Hamilton doesn't have leverage. By the way, I pay him too because he's part of my podcast network. He doesn't have Brian Kelly leverage. So it's always been easier for a media person to defend the players. They've never had more power. They can transfer anytime. They can flip at any time. They can skip bowl games, 99% of the bowl games. They can decommit. They get paid. Players have never had more power. But they're like 21. They're not going to have the power of a 55-year-old coach. I don't have the power of Eric Shanks. I don't have that kind of power. He's negotiating with Roger Goodell. He's negotiating with Olympic committees and World Cup committees. The idea that any 21-year-old outside of a Silicon Valley genius would have the power of a 55-year-old female executive of a Silicon Valley brand. No, he wouldn't. It's not the way the world works. It's not the way the players eventually do have massive power. You tell me LeBron didn't have power. Chris Paul. How long was his contract? Remember the contract? We were like, He's almost shot, isn't he? Players do have power. They don't have it when they're 19. So I'll give you an example. Here's an example of a player having power. He's not even a great player. Jimmy Garoppolo. So we would both say he's a B quarterback. But he's good.
Yes. Yeah. Played in the Super Bowl.
If you and I rank quarterbacks, we'd probably both have him around 14, 15-ish.
Yes. If he's healthy.
And going into the season, everybody was like, yeah, he's done. Think this morning. If Aaron Rodgers doesn't leave Green Bay, if Russell Wilson doesn't leave Seattle, both probably true. We have six teams minimum that need a quarterback. Pittsburgh, Washington, Denver, Houston, Carolina, New Orleans. Three others that will consider it. Giants, Dolphins, Detroit. He will be a veteran Super Bowl quarterback on the market. Do you understand the leverage the 49ers will have for Jimmy Garoppolo? So players don't even have to be great. Mel Tucker's no guarantee he's a great coach. I think he is, but he had leverage. The San Francisco 49ers have Garoppolo. He's not a great quarterback. They'll have insane leverage. That's what this is all about. Leverage is money. Leverage is power. And timing is both. The Niners are going to go, if Jimmy stays healthy, into this offseason, 10 teams need quarterbacks. I'm not even counting Matt Ryan in Atlanta. They do, but they can't get out of his contract. He's too big of a cap hit. So we always lament players have value. It's just not at 21 in a college program. They got a little value. Bryce Young's probably making, I'm going to guess here. I have no idea. I know my company's paying a little bit. He's probably making $600,000 this year. And if Bryce is such a great kid, he's probably giving it to his offensive lineman. A year ago, he got free pizza in the commissary. This year, he makes $600,000. And we don't think, but it's rare. 20-year-old athletes, 21-year-old athletes. I mean, look at even in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers can be franchise tagged. Now, you get a lot of money for franchise tag, but you're kind of trapped, right? Like, you get more if you went to the market. So we get all worked up about this stuff. The players, anyway, I'm just done ranting. I'm just trying to make a point on when I see people lament what coaches make, 99% of football coaches there's 360 Division I college basketball programs. There's 130 Division I football programs. I'm not even counting Division II and Division III. 99% of coaches at all these levels don't make anything. Brian Kelly does. Okay, there's about 12 to 15 football coaches that make, wow.
What is he supposed to do, turn it down? I don't like having conversations with people who haven't been offered $100 million to do something about what they would do if they were offered $100 million.
The only people I know that have been are coaches.
Unless you've made $100 million or someone has brought you a $100 million check.
Yes.
The preaching about what you would do with that check is a waste of everyone's time. It's $100 million. There's not a whole lot I wouldn't do for $100 million. I'm going to say that.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
All right. He's one of the great college football guys. He's Fox's The Athletic. He does a ton of stuff. Writer for The Athletic. Follow him there. I pay my monthly. Bruce Feldman now joining us. I'm off my soapbox now. I'm done ranting. Mr. Feldman, Mr. Connected. So, you know, it's interesting. And I said this to start last hour. I said, listen, whenever you lose somebody, your girlfriend breaks up with you, your boyfriend breaks up with you, your college coach leaves you, a network loses a talented person, people have hurt feelings. You feel like you've been dumped. And I understand that. Like, you have a right, if somebody dumps you at the altar, to be sad. Like, Oklahoma fans have a right to be upset. So do Notre Dame fans. I think they'll both be fine. They're great programs. There's great coaches. But there is this whole thing. It's not that they left. It's how they left. Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley are kind of leaving the same way. Isn't the only difference one fan base thinks they can win a national title?
I'm going to make a different distinction
here. Right.
So on the Brian Kelly part of it, I think one of the issues that some people have on this is they're still technically alive for the playoff.
That's right.
So coaches constantly preach finish, all in, all those things. And if somehow, and it's not that far-fetched, there could be a couple of losses this weekend, Notre Dame could be in the playoff mix.
Yeah.
They legit have a shot. It's an outside shot.
Yeah.
But to make the playoff, and Brian Kelly's gone. So the whole aspect of finish, and all the things coaches preach.
It's hypocrisy.
This is hypocrisy. Now, some of the other stuff you said a minute ago, I do agree with. I mean, Nick Saban has paid a fortune. Nick Saban is underpaid compared to what he has done, not just for Alabama, but for that entire community, the university community, the state, quite honestly. Dabo Swinney, still, also, probably underpaid given what he has done to Clemson, the brand, the university, all those things. There are a bunch of other guys now who have gotten swept up because they're getting paid millions upon millions, and they're going to be disastrous hires.
Yeah.
And that's where the school and the boosters, they're out, and they've made bad investments, right? I think what has happened in this wave, and you mentioned Mel Tucker. Mel Tucker's done a really good job at Michigan State. I think what they've done is really they're investing in him to say, we believe he is going to be the next big thing.
Yeah.
And so they ponied up, and I think that is on, you know, former walk-on basketball player at MSU who has hit it big since. And look, you know, these aren't like Jerry Jones, but I think for a lot of people who can't own pro sports teams right now, I think they see the investment of their alma mater. They have a connection of a feeling of ownership. And well, I think that's how they've done it.
Yeah, Dan Gilbert owns the Cavs. He's probably the biggest Michigan State booster. There's another one that's huge. There's three of them. And they're all sports fans. Like, sometimes your biggest, your richest alums are not sports fans. It just happens that Michigan State's got three billionaire alums, and they're huge sports fans. That's a great point. One does own a pro team. Two don't. And so they're like, this is kind of our...
They have a sense of ownership. They can be, as one football coach I know said, they can be the hot shot at their country club now. You know, and it's like, look, that's a big deal. And if Mel leads Michigan State to the playoff or a national title, that investment will be very, very prudent.
So sometimes lost in all this is that we believe these big brands, Alabama, USC, Oklahoma, they've always got all great talent, and a new coach will come in and flip a switch. You don't think that's true for Lincoln Riley at USC. I believe you think it's a little bit more of a challenge.
I do, and it has nothing to do with Lincoln Riley. For Fox, I did the UCLA-USC game. And so I was around the USC program for a couple of days, and you'd look physically at them. I've lived out here, Colin, for 20 years. This was the worst-looking USC team kind of on the hoof since I've been out here. It's just very underwhelming. And look, there's reasons for that is when you've had basically a lame duck head coach as Clay Helton has been for like 3 years, that undermines recruiting in a big way. And then I think what has also happened, and look, this is no fault of the assistants. It's no fault of the interim Dante Williams. I think that you had basically a lot of folks who feel like they've been independent contractors.
Yeah.
So there's been really shaky leadership at best. And so I think all those factors have conspired to a very, very average roster. I mean, I don't really care what the star system says of like, oh, this guy used to be a five-star and this guy came in as a high four-star. A lot of those guys were probably overrated because of they were committed to USC. And I'm not saying all of them were that way, but I think a bunch of them, that's how some of that stuff works for me. You talk to enough coaches about it. So I think what Lincoln Riley is inheriting is a roster that needs a massive upgrade, right? There was Drake London. He's an All-American, but Drake London was on crutches for our UCLA game. He was, you know, when he was out, they were way limited. And their defense, there's nothing close to Leonard Williams. There's no Troy Polamalu's. There's no Brian Cushing's there.
Yeah.
So I think that is the biggest challenge. Now, what bodes well for him is Lincoln Riley has a huge name and reputation for developing offensive players, right? We've seen it, multiple Heisman guys, multiple first picks of the draft, cutting edge offense. Guys are going to want to come play for him. They already do. A bunch of these Southern California kids were committed for the 2023 class. Guess where they're going to end up going, right? They're going to end up staying home now. The question will be how quickly can he, in part through the portal and in part through recruiting, can he elevate the defensive side of the ball and the offensive line? Because that is a huge issue.
Yeah, O-line for USC.
Dreadful.
It is. They have one NFL prospect of the 17 kids on scholarship. It is a disaster. It has been. They've paid no attention to it.
What's good though there is, look, he's expected to bring Bill Beedenbow from Oklahoma. He's the reason why this isn't a regular air raid, because they have a really physical run game. They're very creative.
They do.
He's arguably the best offensive line coach in college football. If he comes out here as we expect, That is a huge coup, guys. You know, that I think that will take care of some of the softness that you see in right now in this program.
Okay, so I hear, let's talk Brian Kelly to LSU. So, you know, people can be upset, whatevs. Let's talk this. People have said he's a weird fit, kind of. Winning tends to solve fit. I mean, Nick Saban was not from Alabama. I always tend to think you win stuff. Pete Carroll, when he got the USC job, people thought it was an awful hire. And it's like old NFL, kind of quirky guy. The quirkiness was perfect when he was winning, right? Like we all saw it as an asset. So let's just talk. Brian Kelly, LSU. Will they win quick? How does it feel to you?
It feels a little odd, but like you said, I mean, Les Miles from Ohio. You know, Saban's from West Virginia and it was up in the Big Ten and spent a bunch of time. You know, he's bounced around. But I think Brian Kelly, don't underestimate him. He's a really smart coach. You know, what you said, Notre Dame was a mess. Literally, it was a mess. The locker room was a mess. Everything was a mess. And he turned it into a legit, consistent playoff contender, right? And I think he knows exactly what he's doing. Also, I give him credit. He evolved in the job. And
he did.
I think that
so
is.
So did Harbaugh this year.
They did, yeah. And I think one of the things with Brian Kelly that maybe doesn't get said enough is Notre Dame job. 5 years at Notre Dame is a long time. It's like dog years at other places. He was there for 12 years, right? So that's an extensive amount of time. I think what is going to be interesting here is the area where Notre Dame has been best in the last decade is they've had great offensive lines.
Tremendous.
And right now, knowing the LSU roster really well, they were very average at best, if not worse than that, this year. And their O-line room is seriously going to be depleted because a lot of those guys have played for a long time, and they're going to be out of eligibility. So if you're Notre Dame and if you're Brian Kelly, you're going to have to really hit the portal really, really hard because you don't have the bodies that you're going to inherit to be able to compete at a high level. Now, there's some really gifted defensive linemen. There's a bunch of really good receivers and a ton of really good defensive backs. I mean, there's talent on the roster. The O-line is a big concern. And the question I would put to you, Colin, is what is doing a good job for Brian Kelly? Doing a good job for him, if you don't win a national title within 4 years.
Three, I'd say. They're not going to wait four.
Yeah.
He'll get heat by year two. I do think he'll win. But
what's win though? I mean, him going 10-2, that's not going to be good enough. You win, you got to win a national title there. They just fired the guy who won a national title. It was less than 2 years within him winning the national title. And he's from there. He's one of them. Brian Kelly's from Boston.
Yeah. He looks like he's from Boston.
He does. Look, and he, you know what? Good to his credit, he is, I think he's sincere and authentic in terms of like, he's not trying to be somebody else. Right. He knows who he is at 60. Let's see how it goes.
Okay. By the way, Joy, remind me to bring up Lane Kiffin to Miami. I have to go to another question first. Just remind me.
Okay.
We're not letting you out of here without that. Because I'm rooting for it. She's rooting for it. Nothing against Ole Miss. I want to say this about Michigan. I love college football. I do not talk it as much as I did 7 years ago because the sport's become increasingly insular. I loved this weekend. I love Michigan beating Ohio State. I love Lincoln Riley coming west because Denver West, it matters. When USC played Texas, it got a 22.5 rating. Now it gets 15s. It's not that college football is bad. It's too insular. So I watched Michigan, and I thought, okay, I could take two paths on this. It's a one-off. It was cold. But as I watched them play, Bruce, I thought, you can duplicate that. Because they owe it. They have found an identity. Now, I'm not saying they're going to Columbus and knocking Ohio State backwards next year. But that will be what they will look like going forward. Because that looked like to me, oh, you can do that. You don't have to be the fastest team. You don't have to have Alabama receivers. Michigan's had great O-linemen, good backs, tight ends for my entire life. So your takeaway on the win, I think it's bigger than just the day. It felt identity changing and momentum changing.
This felt to me a lot like Stanford 2.0 Jim Harbaugh. Because it was the more physical team, as you said, really good on the offensive line. Hassan Haskins was a punishing runner who just kept moving the ball down the field. And I think what is key there is, like, give credit to Josh Gattis, the offense coordinator. He took a lot of what his buddy Joe Moorhead had whipped Ohio State with when Oregon went in there and just had them on their heels. And there was a lot of different stuff that they couldn't handle. I don't want to say they weren't prepared for it. They just couldn't handle. The other thing that was big was Aiden Hutchinson, David Ojabo, Joshua, those guys got after Ohio State. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson looks like he could be a legit top five pick. He was dominant.
Oh.
It's been a long time in this rivalry since Michigan had the best defensive player in the game, and there was no question they had that. So,
you know who reminded me a little bit? J.J. Watt.
Yeah, well, probably a slightly lighter yeah. J.J., but relentless. He's every bit as explosive.
Can't block him. He made the Ohio State's tackles, who are pros, completely overwhelmed.
It was like pretty amazing to see. Now, here's where I think Harbaugh said this after the game. He's like, I think this is the start of something. This is the beginning.
That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah. I mean, now that all of a sudden, and look, he deserves credit from this point because he got younger. Like we talked about Kelly Avavin, you mentioned it, got younger. When he brought in Josh Gattis, that was a good move. When he found Mike McDonald, nobody knew who he was other than his brother because he was on the Ravens staff. That was a brilliant addition. And I think now that they will be able to recruit, people are going to buzz about, whoa, do you see what's going on with Michigan and Jim Harbaugh? I want to go be there. I don't think you've heard that in years. And so we'll see where this goes, but they got momentum now.
No, it's you brought up something really interesting. Brian Kelly at Notre Dame is two Brian Kellys. There was a tragedy early. They couldn't kind of identify what they were. And then at some point he went, time out. We're a Northern power. We're going to go O-line like the Cleveland Browns is the centerpiece of it. And then there's a second 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. It's a different Notre Dame program. They can play with Georgia's, mostly. I think, to your point, I think Michigan feels like this year, it's like, oh, okay, this is a different program now. So I'm excited for it. All right, I want to segue to this. Let's go, because I'm going to probably have you on before the games. So I want to go to the Lane Kiffin story. Lane Kiffin is different. I don't think Lane would ever fit at a Notre Dame.
Of course he wouldn't. That's nothing profound there. I mean,
even Michigan. But Miami's got a little toot. Miami's got a little coastal attitude. Miami's got a little swag. Sometimes they're borderline inappropriate. And I think, okay, Miami doesn't have the greatest facilities, nor do they pay what the big boys do. But Lane Kiffin to Miami, to me, feels absolutely right. The savior of the program. Am I nuts?
Not necessarily about this. You might be nuts about other stuff, but like this, I would say, look, Mario Cristobal has done a great job at Oregon. He is from there. He is of there. He is a Miami guy through and through. If they could get Mario Cristobal, I think that was
Can they afford him?
It depends. Is The Rock going to bring money out? I don't know who's going to. Like, where's the Miami money come from? I don't know on that, honestly. They have to sort out. They're close to, I think, having an AD in place. Remember, they're going through an AD search. If there's no Mario, I think there are some old Miami people, former Miami players, who do have some influence. They have more voice than at any other program in the country.
Okay.
There are a lot of those guys are interested in Lane, and Lane, I think, would have a hard time saying no if Miami came after him.
I think he knows it's a great fish. I know Lane well enough. In his off time, he loves to get in a boat with his kids and go fishing. He used to send me pictures when he was at that Florida job. It feels like Miami feels like Lane Kiffin. I think Brian Kelly looked like a Notre Dame football coach. It's like Brian Kelly, once he got out of the kind of the anger tunnel he was in, it was like, yeah, it kind of worked. Boston guy, Notre Dame. I mean, there are coaches that feel like schools.
Yeah, and also, by the way, you know, he's done a really good job at Ole Miss, and Ole Miss has been elevated. In the ACC, it's basically Clemson right now, and that's what you're shooting at. You don't have a lot of other stuff. You know, yeah, Pitt had a really good year, and NC State had a decent year, but like it's there for the taking. You're going to compete against Clemson, and you don't have to go like push past like six other SEC heavyweights who are honestly they're better resourced than they are in Ole Miss. So that's the interesting part of that. And he has a ton of social media, you know, like a lot of the stuff that Miami, I think, buzzes about.
Yes.
It fits with him.
Yeah. All right, 1 minute left. Here's the committee last night. I tend to defend committees. I think it's hard. You're public. You get ripped. I think Oklahoma State, I said it 3 weeks ago, is the most underrated team in the country. I think they could play Georgia and make it uncomfortable, although I would take Georgia. So when you looked at the committee and you go Georgia 1 and Michigan 2 and Bama and Cincinnati and Oklahoma State and Notre Dame, I still think Ohio State would beat Notre Dame. I do not think Notre Dame has a national – they may have aspirations this year. I don't even think they're close to the top four or five team. I think Oklahoma State would blow them out. I think Ohio State would beat them bad. Any problems with that, the group?
No, and I think, honestly, the issue for Notre Dame last week hurt them, not because they played Stanford and Stanford stinks this year, but more because Wisconsin lost to Minnesota. Well, why does that really matter that much?
That was their big one, wasn't it?
They needed Wisconsin, who they whipped early in the year, and Wisconsin had started to go on a roll. They needed Wisconsin not only to play for the Big Ten title, they needed to win it. If Wisconsin is 10-3, that would give Notre Dame a big-time win in their resume. Right now, arguably their best win is 8-4 Purdue.
That's it.
Right?
It
you know, is. They just don't have enough.
Yep.
And I think that hurts them. I think
they were also soundly beaten at home by Cincinnati.
They were. Now, what is interesting is if Oklahoma State loses, or even if Michigan gets knocked off by Iowa, I think, or potentially Cincinnati could lose. To me, the most interesting thing right now is going to be SEC. If Georgia beats Alabama, and Alabama's a two-loss team, I wonder how far the committee would drop them, because you got to remember, if they lose, they're a two-loss team with one really good win. It's Ole Miss. After that, I mean, we saw them struggle badly with a bad LSU team, bad Florida team, not a good Auburn team, right? But they won those games. But if they're sitting there at 11-2, does the committee say, yeah, they're the fourth best team? Sorry, Georgia, you got to beat them again. I don't know how the committee kind of does that.